from the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, this is Deconstructing Dinner.
And welcome to Deconstructing Dinner, produced in the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio in Nelson, British Columbia. My name's John Steinman. While the dominant voices at these meetings are seemingly those from the seed industry and the branches of government that are speaking for them, there is little room for the public voice to be heard. Hence the creation of the Ban Terminator campaign, a campaign designed to educate the public on the issue of Terminator technology and lobby those parties participating at these UN meetings. As the coordinator of Ban Terminator, Lucy Sherratt describes the campaign.
The campaign was formed in May of 2005, directly in response to the actions of the Canadian government. So when the Canadian government made it clear at the United Nations that they were going to work to promote Terminator technology, Canadian groups in particular responded to this with a discussion about the need to start the campaign. And the campaign is now a global campaign that's really one of its main focuses is the Convention on Biological Diversity and protecting and strengthening the moratorium, hopefully turning it into a ban and encouraging national bans on Terminator. The campaign is supported by Via Campesina and the Pesticide Action Network of Asia Pacific, Third World Network, and other organizations across the world. Networks of farmers and indigenous peoples participate in the campaign in various ways. And there are national campaigns. There's a Canadian campaign, a German campaign, a UK campaign, and other types of ways that peoples in different countries participate in the campaign. And really, the time is critical right now, in February, before the March meeting of the Convention on Biological Diversity, which has the most authority in making decisions. And this meeting will happen on March the 20th to 31st. And so we're really asking Canadians to write to the new government and ask for a very strong position against Terminator technology for this meeting in particular, with the hope that this would strengthen the moratorium or certainly keep the Canadian government from supporting the actions of Australia and New Zealand at this time.
And that was Lucy Sherratt of the Ban Terminator campaign. Again, for more information, you can visit www.banterminator.org. And this information will also be available on the show's website at www.cjly.net/deconstructingdinner. My final guest on today's program is the very man who has been traveling the world since 1998 promoting the technology protection system, otherwise known as Terminator technology. And that is Harry Collins, the Vice President of Technology Transfer for the Mississippi-based Delta and Pineland Company, the company that, along with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, developed this technology that genetically modifies plants to produce sterile seeds. Delta and Pineland is presently conducting greenhouse tests of Terminator technology. They are the 11th largest seed company in the world, as well as the largest cottonseed company in the world. I spoke with Harry from his office in Scott, Mississippi, and he explains the technology in greater detail.
With our particular system, the farmer would buy seed that just prior to bagging the seed company would trigger it with the application of a specific chemical. And when the seed germinates, basically a non-reversible process occurs genetically within the plants. These would be the plants in the farmer's field, but it would not manifest itself till the very end of the production of seed in the farmer's field. That is, the seed needs to develop, because with most crop plants, the seed is the product that is harvested and sold and so on by the farmer. What would happen at the very end of the development of the seed, the dry down period of the seed, it would then become non-viable, so that couldn't replant the seed and get it to germinate the next season.
As has already been discussed by today's guests, the seed industry and supportive governments are promoting this technology as not only a protective tool for the companies that are developing new strains of plants, but also as a biosafety measure. As Terry Baim of the National Farmers Union suggested, this mention of biosafety is merely a cover-up for the technology's principal purpose. But regardless, there are many concerns that, as cross-contamination has already proven to be an issue with genetically modified crops, that contamination from sterile seeds could then render neighboring crops and plants that are not genetically modified sterile as well. Harry responds to these concerns.
There have been concerns that some of these might eventually outcross with related weed species or related plants, wild plants, and this could be a measure to prevent that from happening. In other words, if the pollen that would be released by these plants in the farmer's fields would also cause, if they were to outcross two weedy plants in the or wild plants in the surrounding area, it would cause those plants to produce non-viable seed. Therefore, the transgenic genes that would also go along with that pollen would not be propagated and carried on into the wild species. So that's what we call biosafety, and that would be an advantage of the TPS system, the technology protection system.
But he continues in ensuring that it's known that the crops by which this technology would apply to are predominantly self-pollinating and are those that would pose little risk of cross-pollination with conventional plants or wild species.
One point I would like to make to you, we've always talked about highly self-pollinated crops. We haven't talked about cross-pollinated crops, and that is significant because it's the self-pollinated crops that do not outcross very much, and therefore you get very little contamination on farmers' fields near the it would be minuscule, and I don't think that the farmer would ever notice that there's any sterile seed in his field.
But as Terry Baim of the National Farmers Union mentioned earlier on the show, cross-pollination is not the only way in which the contamination of other crops can occur. Physical contamination through the bulk processing methods of the agricultural industry creates the environment for physical contamination between seeds. On the topic of contamination, one concern regarding this technology is, of course, the greenhouse testing that is presently being conducted by Delta and Pineland. Because of the UN recommendations as part of the Convention on Biodiversity, Delta and Pine and the US government have not been conducting field testing on Terminator technology out in the open. But in August of 2005, a tornado ripped through communities in Mississippi and destroyed two of Delta and Pineland's greenhouses while damaging 11 others. I asked Harry if field testing on Terminator technology has now begun.
And I can tell you that there was no contamination from of any kind of transgenics because of that storm that we had in that situation. And certainly there was nothing as far as TPS is concerned.
In touching on the very name of this technology itself, TPS, Technology Protection System, the name illustrates the principal reason for the creation of this technology, and that is to protect the companies that are developing new strains of agricultural crops. As Harry explains, this technology will provide an incentive for the seed companies to further their research.
When farmers buy seed and only buy it one time, it causes firms that are developing those seed to not have an incentive, and therefore many times we've seen this happen, for instance, with small grains such as wheat. There are very few companies that are involved in wheat breeding any longer because they would develop new varieties, and then the farmers would purchase the seed one time and they wouldn't come back, and because of that are not getting a lot of new varieties that they'd like to have because the seed companies can't afford to invest in research and then not get a payback.
As Harry explains, seed companies are concerned of the ability for farmers to save seed. As is the case, farmers can purchase seeds and save the new seeds from the harvest for use the following season. From the perspective of the seed companies, Harry explains that they cannot afford to invest in research and not get a payback for this research, and hence the creation of Terminator technology, a technology that renders seeds sterile upon harvest. But in speaking of these seed companies not being able to afford to conduct research without getting a payback, we can refer to a recent broadcast of Deconstructing Dinner during which the topic of declining farmers' incomes here in Canada was discussed. As is the case in the seed industry here in Canada, four principal seed companies are DuPont, Syngenta, Monsanto, and Bayer. In 2004, DuPont pulled in $2.3 billion in profits. Bayer, $974 million in profits. Syngenta pulled in $598 million in profits, and Monsanto pulled in $234 million in profit. And in 2004, farmers in Canada recorded a net loss of $7.7 billion. Are these seed companies really having trouble affording to invest in research? You can find out more about corporate profits in the agricultural industry by visiting www.nfu.ca. As is also an argument that enters into the circle of debate surrounding Terminator technology or any genetically modified technology pertaining to agriculture, it is often said by industry that in the end, farmers have the choice between whether to save and reuse seed or purchase seed from the market. Harry explains.
Farmers will make the choice. If they get a payback, just like anything that's used by businessmen and so on, if they get a payback with higher yields, newer traits that make it more efficient to produce the crop, then they're going to purchase the seed. If they don't get that with new varieties, then they'll go back to using the seed that they've been using and are able to save as they have in the past. So,
as Harry explains that farmers would have the choice to choose between Terminator seeds or the traditional practice of perhaps saving and reusing seeds from harvest, we can look at the other side of the argument, which was presented by Terry Baim of the NFU, in that with the prevalence of contracts and conditions that the agricultural industry forces farmers to accept, choice is becoming extremely narrow. But with all decision or discussion on what could potentially be the structure of the agricultural industry should this technology be approved and commercialized, this is all speculation. As we have discussed, there is presently a de facto moratorium on any field testing of this technology. Harry responds to the moratorium.
There is no moratorium. I'm not sure where that comes from. It's something that's been propagated by a lot of people, but there is no moratorium, and there never has been a moratorium, and I would like you to check that out. It's something that people in a lot of the NGOs, the non-government organizations, have said, but it's not true. There is no moratorium, and there has never been a moratorium, and that's one thing where I think their credibility is hurt. They make these statements, and you need to check it out because it's not true.
As Harry's response to the de facto moratorium perhaps confuses previous references to this moratorium, it is important to clarify that what exists right now is a recommendation that has been put forward by the UN Convention on Biodiversity. Although not legally binding, the recommendation has placed countries in a political position by which the field testing and commercialization of this technology requires further discussion, and hence creates what is being called a de facto moratorium. As was also mentioned earlier, Canada is pushing to change these recommendations, and I will play a clip from my conversation where I presented a previous comment regarding biosafety that was mentioned by Terry Baim of the NFU. Harry explains following this what Canada, along with Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S. are pushing for at these U.N. meetings on biodiversity.
One of my guests on the show is Terry Baim, who is the vice president of the National Farmers Union here in Canada, and they're based in Saskatchewan. And if we're speaking here of biosafety and more or less referring to one of his comments, he was mentioning how when the GERT, or Terminator technology in this case, was introduced, that it was at that point admitted that 100% success of this technology was not in fact required, and that all you needed was enough of a control so that farmers could then not justify saving seed for the next season.
I'm not sure who made that statement. I don't think I ever made that statement. I don't think anybody from our company, and, you know, we, by the way, just so you, just to make this clear, it is co-owned by the by Delta and Pineland Company and the USDA ARS, the Agricultural Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And I don't know that either one of us made that statement.
So is this technology, is it not required that this technology be 100% successful?
Well, let me answer it another way. We don't know, and this is what we've asked for all along, and that is that every introduction of anything such as this be judged on a case-by-case basis. And that's the one thing that we've asked for, and the one thing up to now that apparently countries like Canada, New Zealand, Australia have held firm on, and that is that each new technology be judged on a be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. So I cannot tell you one way or the other on that, but we certainly, before it's ever introduced, we go through many regulatory processes, and also, as I say, it would be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. We have not reached the point that we absolutely know the answer to that right now.
Here is another clip from my conversation with Harry. Harry, in wrapping things up, even though this technology has not been fully tested yet, the supply of seeds as it is right now throughout the globe is presently controlled by a shrinking number of corporations, and there is really a handful of crops that are really key, I guess, in forming the foundation for the planet's food supply. Now, given that these particular crops are increasingly becoming those that are genetically modified, it's, I guess, and you correct me if I'm wrong, it's safe to say that if approved, Terminator technology would replace many of these crops and become the foundation for this global food supply. With what you know about this technology and taking into consideration that, yes, it has not fully been tested, is this not a risk that here we are potentially going to populate the planet with plants that contain a gene that are designed to destroy their reproductive capabilities?
Well, let me answer on a couple levels here. First, I want to be sure it's understood that TPS would only be applied to the large crops. It would only be applied to large agricultural economies. It's not going to be applied to the small and sometimes referred to indigenous farmers of various parts of the world. It is not going to be applied to older varieties. It would be newer varieties, and it would be where you have large agricultural economies and where farmers normally, such as in the United States and Canada, they normally, when most crops, buy their seed anyhow because they get high-quality seed. Seed is not that expensive to begin with, and so that's where this would be applied. And again, to the self-pollinated, large self-pollinated crops, I've mentioned wheat, rice, another would be soybeans, and then one other would probably be cotton, which is the crop that we are involved with, one crop we're involved with.
In wrapping up my interview with Harry Collins, I asked him what his outlook was on the commercialization of his technology protection system, or otherwise known as Terminator technology. As he mentioned just previously, the technology is being designed for modern crops on large production-based farms. But as he mentions in the following clip, this is a technology that will help move subsistence farmers to production forms of agriculture. And as was mentioned earlier, subsistence farmers, those growing food to feed themselves and their communities, are certainly not growing modern crops.
I think when calmer people prevail, that they'll understand that this is actually could be a very positive thing, both for biosafety and producing new varieties, new technologies that will help the farmer and help the farmer in some cases move from a subsistence type farming to more production type farming if that's where they want to go. I think that it would encourage farmers to try new varieties that may give them an added boost in their production and more efficient production. So, and they may find that it's the kind of thing that would produce enough of a crop that they could then become a production farmer and actually have crops that they could sell rather than just as subsistence crops where they just have enough to live on.
And that was Harry Collins, Vice President of Technology Transfer for the Mississippi-based Delta and Pineland Company, the company that, along with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, developed the technology that genetically modifies plants to produce sterile seeds. You can visit Delta and Pineland's website at www.deltaandpine.com. One of the key voices missing on today's program is one representing our federal government's Department of Agriculture, who are representing the Canadian public at these UN meetings on biodiversity where Terminator technology is being discussed. One of the lead figures is Dr. Campbell Davidson, who is with the department's International Scientific Cooperation Bureau. He was unavailable to comment as he was out of the country. I did, however, forward my questions to the media spokesperson for the Bureau, and I was told that they were not able to answer the questions. Why? Because as a result of the newly elected Conservative government, the department is in a process of transition, and they are unsure of how their position on Terminator technology will change. certainly one of the downsides to elections that seem to take place every year or two when a minority government is in power. But as was the case, my questions were mostly referring to the meetings in Spain themselves and what Canada's position was at these meetings. I asked why Canada is being criticized by international organizations. I inquired into the recent comment made by Campbell Davidson, who stated that Terminator seeds could provide a biosafety benefit. I asked why Canadians should trust a technology that would be introduced by the very same companies responsible for concerns surrounding cross-contamination of genetically modified crops. But most importantly, I asked that given the issue at the forefront of agriculture here in Canada is that farmers' incomes are at all-time lows while the companies who control the agricultural industry are making record profits. I asked, is Terminator technology not just another step that will only increase the actual costs for farmers? I asked if this technology is not a push in the wrong direction. But these questions could not be answered as the Department of Agriculture is unsure of their present position. All the more reason for Canadians to let our newly appointed Minister of Agriculture, Chuck Strahl, know where you stand on this issue. Do you support it or do you not? You can contact him at 613-759-1059, or you can send him an email at Strahl, Strahlc, at agr.gc.ca. Given Terminator technology will be discussed once again in March at the UN meetings on biodiversity taking place in Brazil, I'll pose these questions once again on a future show that will follow up on the outcomes of that meeting. I'm sure by then we will know Canada's position. Also, should you want to know more about the topic of seeds and the threat of genetically modified crops to farmers, you can pick up a great book called Brave New Seeds that is published here in Canada by Fernwood Publishing. This is a book that was published in 2000, although everything inside of it is still very much applicable today. It even does mention Terminator seeds. I'll leave you with a couple of clips from my interviews.
Bottom line is that this is agriculture, this is food that we're talking about. It's food. I mean, none of us can live without food, and the vast majority of people in the world can't live without agriculture. And to imagine that this handful of pesticide corporations who've taken over the seed industry and are demanding all these rights to dictate what we can and cannot do with seeds, I think it's an utterly scary and a gross development. And I think it's time we start saying, you know, back off and let's think this through more carefully and come up with a seed system that suits the needs of people.
This is nature and life and reproduction and the fundamentals of our planet and our biosphere, and somehow when you attach genetics to it, it becomes this scientific commodity to be sold.
That was this week's edition of Deconstructing Dinner, produced and recorded in the studios of Nelson, British Columbia's Kootenai Co-op Radio. I've been your host, John Steinman. I thank my technical assistant tonight, Diane Matenko. All of those affiliated with this station are volunteers, and financial support for this station is received through membership, donations, and sponsorship from local businesses and organizations. For more information on the station or to become a member, you can visit www.cjly.net or dial 250-352-9600. And should you have any comments about tonight's show or want to learn more about topics covered, you can visit www.cjly.net/deconstructingdinner. Till next week.